I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
Support comes from Grady Health Foundation, presenting Move for Grady Saturday, April 27th, featuring a family-friendly bike ride through Atlanta's in-town neighborhoods. There's a ride, run, or walk distance for everyone, benefiting Grady Health System. More at moveforgrady.com.
So, what's on the political breakfast menu this week? I'm Dennis O'Hare. I'll be your host with opinions from the left and right, and some of the specials this time include Georgia lawmakers trying yet again to come up with a regional solution for Atlanta's traffic. Governor Deal does not want to be caught with billions of dollars in extra state taxes on his hands. We'll discuss his plan to give that back. And the brunch bill is back. Will state lawmakers get between you and that Sunday morning mimosa? Pull up a seat at the table. With me here today, Republican strategist Brian Robinson, Democratic strategist Theron Johnson. Gentlemen, greetings. Welcome back.
Happy Friday.
Good morning.
Let's start with transit, because in the middle of the session, now a regional comprehensive transit planning bill is rolled out. You would have thought this might have happened earlier. Brian, maybe you can explain from a legislative wonk point of view why this is happening now when there's so little time to get it through.
A very fair point. This is something that's not a new issue. It's not something that just erupted and we're like, hey, we should build new transit.
We've been talking about it for years.
It's been going on for a very long time. And obviously, it is getting to be a more and more crucial topic because we are choking on traffic. And even as we are building because of our transportation bill in 2015, we are building new infrastructure and new capacity, but it's not going to be enough to keep up.
It's all roads and bridges and things.
That's exactly right. But I think what's important about the timing is, look, I doubt anything huge is going to happen this session. We are in a shortened session to some degree because it is an election year. You've got an open governor's seat, lieutenant governor's seat, various other positions.
So why roll it out, if you will, pardon the pun, now?
Because it takes a long time. Because you've got to plant a flag at some juncture, and then you can grow from there and build on that in future sessions. If they can make any progress, and they've made some baby steps in recent sessions, if they can make any progress, that's going to help in the years to come. You can't, you know, you don't eat an elephant in one bite, or whatever that saying is. And so we're taking some bites here. But what you're seeing is a change in the atmosphere. You're seeing leadership in Gwinnett and Cobb County coming to the Capitol, showing that they are willing to entertain the idea of expanding a regional MARTA system that may be called something different.
But one thing that hasn't changed, Theron, is some of that tension between any regional planning agency and some of the local governments. I talked to Cobb Commission Chair Mike Boyce this past week. He was saying he's in favor of the idea in general, but he doesn't want to give up any autonomy. And there's the rub, isn't it?
So here's the bottom line. You got Fulton, DeKalb, and Atlanta for 50-plus years now that has been funding MARTA. Now I am happy that Cobb and Gwinnett have joined these three entities and saying, hey, we want to do something around expanding transit in our region. But what you're hearing from Cobb and Gwinnett is also a concern about how is it going to get paid for, not losing their ability to have autonomy. But more importantly, this is something that I think that will be worked out during the bill.
And the bill does allow for local votes. So they'll be happy with that. But suppose you have a proposed rapid transit line that goes from, let's say, Forsyth County through the west side to Atlanta, and Cobb says no, then you've got a big hole in the middle of it. Isn't that the problem with some of the mechanism here?
Chairman Tanner deserves a lot of credit here because he's taken out the time to go and meet with every different county and municipality to really hear some of their concerns. The ultimate question is, Dennis, is that how do we make this equitable for everyone that's involved? How do we make sure that it's a true long-term plan that really solves some of our transit issues? And so I think that I'm optimistic that this conversation now, because of Speaker Rawson and the governor and others, have said, listen, we've got to do something about regional transit. But we got to make sure that you don't penalize Atlanta, Fulton, and the Cab at a time where you want Cobb and Gwinnett, but they've got to be team players and understand that they're a little late to the party, but they got to make sure that they do what's best for their constituents.
I think it's great that you're seeing Republican leadership really stepping up to the table here and addressing what is one of the most pressing issues facing our state, not only the quality of life for the people who live here, but also our ability to attract new jobs. Look, Amazon is going to be looking at how long it takes their employees to get to work. They're going to be looking at, can they get there by MARTA if they want to go on mass transit.
And they're also going to be looking at what the estimates are of how long it'll take to get this system going.
Yeah, absolutely. I think part of what you're seeing is for the longest time, Republican had a legitimate complaint about expanding mass transit. It was going to raise taxes immediately, and we weren't convinced of the return on investment, that we would build all of this stuff not knowing if people would actually use it. But we're now at a place where you have this millennial generation coming up, and they want mass transit, perhaps have already gotten used to using it in other communities. And you're seeing people who live in very Republican areas of the state who are in the worst, most god-awful, want to bang your head against the window bad traffic, and they can't get to work. And, you know, there are certain arteries in this state that are just beyond miserable. Like getting from Atlanta to Athens in an afternoon of a weekday is
a non-football afternoon.
On a regular Wednesday, it is the seventh ring of hell.
But we also got to make sure that MARTA is protected, and that is really clear. But let's go back and realize, why wasn't MARTA expanded up into Fulton, to Cobb and Gwinnett, and other places like going east and west? It's because white suburban parents and voters did not want access to be given to African Americans who primarily lived in the city of Atlanta so they can access their counties. And so, yes, it's because of traffic, but also what you've seen after 50 years, these white suburban voters, most of them are conservative, have said, you know what, I'm willing to entertain some conversations about light rail because I'm tired of staying in traffic. And so let's not forget that this region has really evolved racially. And now they're open to actually talking about expanding MARTA. But we got to protect MARTA through this plan and not make them less efficient than they already are.
So there's that racial component, no doubt about it. And that's often the case when we're here talking on this show. So many of the issues that we discuss locally do have this long-term racial component. But one thing that's changed is that Gwinnett County, which in the 1990 census was probably 95% white, literally that high, is now majority minority.
Yeah, but the leadership is still majority white.
And that,
you have
that,
a chairwoman
sure,
who, and you look at the makeup of the board, the leaders that are elected on the county level are overwhelmingly white. It's only on the statewide level that we see the diversity clearly being there.
And that'll change.
And as for those MARTA counties and the city of Atlanta, you have relatively new leaders in all three places. Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms in Atlanta, DeKalb County CEO Michael Thurman, and then you have Rob Pitts, a veteran of the Atlanta City Council, now in charge in Fulton County. So do those three get together and go to the legislature and say, here are the protections we want?
Yeah, I think you're going to see that as a result for Chairman Tanner meeting with them individually. I know that DeKalb County particularly has always wanted to figure out how do they expand the Clifton Corridor, where in Fulton, Chairman Pitts have said, you know, let's make sure that we fully fund these projects that the voters voted on. So I think what you're going to see, Dennis, is that the three of them are going to come together with a comprehensive solution to whatever problems may come our way. And then it's going to be left up to Cobb and Gwinnett to meet these other three halfway and figure out if we can come up with a compromise.
Meanwhile, Governor Deal has rolled out a couple of new initiatives, again, fairly late in the session. One dealing with law enforcement. Theron, I'm going to start with you on this one because it appears the governor has picked up, if not consciously, on the move by the city of Atlanta to, if not eliminate cash bond for low-level offenses, at least give judges more flexibility in deciding whether to exempt some defendants from cash bond.
You know, this is a Governor Deal that we see that as he ends his term as governor and really ends his term in elected office, he has actually been a very sensible governor and realizing that this is an issue that not only comes down on Democratic side or the Republican side. The fact of the matter is that when you have people who are arrested, Dennis, not just in Atlanta, but all over the state, who are arrested for nonviolent crimes, unless they are crimes, but they're sitting in jail months and months and sometimes even years because—
And they haven't been tried yet, and they're presumed innocent.
And they haven't been tried yet, and they're sitting there because of the cash bail bond current state of law that we have. And judges now have the discretion when they're going through the sentencing process, they can determine— based on this person's economic status, is to really determine what type of ability do they want to give this citizen an opportunity to bond. So I think this is a good move by the governor. We have to wait and see how it's going to be welcome in other parts of the state.
Brian, the governor is getting some pushback from folks like Putnam County Sheriff Howard Sills, who is opposing the cash bond idea. He thinks it is letting folks who might have committed crimes out of jail too early, where they could go back and commit other crimes. And he said that Governor Deal, through his criminal justice reform legislation over the years, has done more for criminals, and these are Sheriff Sills' words, than Lucifer and all of his demons combined.
I think that you run the danger when you use memorable quips like that, that people may pay attention to what you're saying and actually study the issue. And if you're wrong, you just look silly to an even bigger audience. And I think he's wrong on this, because Governor Deal's initiative have saved taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars. And this started, I'll remind you, during the Great Recession, when we were at capacity in our prisons and when we were cutting school days to build a new prison. So Governor Deal stopped that from having to happen. We are at a historically low level of commitments to our state prison system, and we've seen a dramatic drop in the number of African-American men going into our prisons every year. And to Sheriff Sills' points, these are nonviolent criminals. That's what Governor Deal has been focused on, people who have an underlying drug addiction or an underlying mental health problem. We've had veterans courts as well, as they face PTSD and the criminal issues that may arise from that. We are making a difference in these people's lives. We are returning people to the workforce instead of them putting them on the taxpayer dole in a prison when they don't need to be there. He has fought Governor Deal every step of the way over these 7 years. And I'll say this. It could be a little bit of personal pique. There was local legislation a few years back to give Sheriff Sills a raise. Governor Deal vetoed that legislation. So always remember that when you're considering what he says about Governor Deal's policy initiatives.
On another subject, Brian, dealing with your former boss, the governor has put forward a measure to try to give back, in a way, to the taxpayers through some changes in the rules, some of the state's expected windfall of federal money, so that we wouldn't see people paying higher state taxes. He's actually getting pushback from both sides of the aisle here, some Republicans saying he ought to be changing the rules to favor taxpayers more, and some Democrats saying, look, we have a structural budget deficit in this state where services are chronically underfunded, and this is the time to try to make them whole.
No one in an election year going into a Republican primary wants to be seen as raising taxes. And in fact, if you can go to your voters and demonstrate a tax cut, which they would be able to do if they incorporated this windfall and cut the rate, that's a great message to send to a primary electorate in this state. So that's the context in which we are seeing this policy move forward. We have a May 22nd primary election, and that's where all eyes are right now. Governor Deal doesn't have a May 22nd primary election or one ever again, and that is a great place to be, and it can put you in a place where you can be non-political and perhaps just for good government and good policy. He's probably right that we shouldn't go nuts and just cut taxes more than, because we don't know exactly what the revenue is going to be. There may be a tax revenue bump. There may not be. We don't exactly have the certainty of future revenues at this juncture.
So why not wait until then?
Because there is a primary on May 22nd.
Okay.
And no one can run the risk. No one wants to run the risk of raising taxes or of standing on the sidelines while taxes went up passively.
I think what you're hearing from the Democrats and a few Republicans is, yes, we want to make sure that we can help cut taxes so people can save money. But when you have an underfunded QBE, when you have an opportunity
QBE
to fund.
QBE is the old education funding formula.
Right. And you have a need for funding around transportation, and we have rural hospitals that are closing. I think therein lies why you're predicting this windfall, which is great, but don't exclude the opportunities around healthcare, education, and transit.
Meanwhile, at the U.S. Capitol, the Senate fails to pass an immigration plan, and Georgia's two Republican senators, Brian, working in slightly different directions here. Senator David Perdue, of course, worked with the president on his plan. He supported it. Johnny Isaacson, though, working with a bipartisan group of senators and saying basically, as he said to me a few weeks ago, we will take up whatever's on the table.
They are playing two different roles in this, but both are out there fighting for immigration reforms that would find great support in Georgia. They're trying to get the wall built, perhaps not on the same timeline as President Trump wants. They're trying to end chain migration, trying to end the diversity visa lottery. These are reforms that many Republicans in Georgia, and perhaps maybe even a majority of Georgians overall, would love to see put into play. So no one in this debate on either side of the issue is going to get everything that they want. We have seen Senate Democrats and House Democrats in Washington just explicitly be on the side of illegal immigrants on almost every issue over the last month. It's absolutely mind-boggling. So the Republicans have a really strong issue here. They need to stick to their guns.
But do they have a strong issue without a solution for the folks who came in under DACA, those people who were brought here illegally when they were children?
Well, you know, Senator Isaacson in recent releases has said that he supports a pathway to citizenship for the so-called dreamers. You know, I don't like that term, but it bars them from sponsoring their parents to then become citizens. So stopping that chain migration that we've been talking about, I think that's a reasonable compromise. Again, not everyone getting exactly what they want, but you're seeing the Republicans be much more open to a compromise than the Democrats.
This is the tale of two Republicans, where you have one Republican in David Perdue who is willing to crawl over broken glass to basically carry out this president's unhinged mission to try to basically divide this country. Then you have Senator Johnny Isaacson, who as well is on the end of his political career, who probably won't run for higher office beyond being the U.S. senator, who says, listen, we got to take more of a sensible, more of a understanding approach to this issue. Now, when we get to the whole issue around DACA, is that the American people support giving these dreamers an opportunity to have a legal pathway to citizenship because they were brought here by their parents. And so they should not be criminalized. They should not be given this negative stigma like Brian and other Republicans want to give them. But I think what you see is that the overall problem is not David Perdue. It's not Johnny Isaacson. It's President Donald Trump's inability to lead. And that is that if you can't get two members of the Senate in a red state like Georgia to agree on an immigration reform policy, then therein lies his lack of leadership. Because the truth of the matter is this. Democrats believe that we can actually strengthen security on our borders and we can actually keep illegals out of this country. But let's figure out what we do with the tens of millions of folks who are here in this country right now. And so the Republican strategy under Trump and David Perdue is to just send them all back. But what Johnny Isaacson is saying is that, listen, let's just look at true immigration reform that includes dealing with DACA, dealing with the Dreamers, but also having a long-term sensible solution to this problem.
I can tell you, I've seen polling, and for Republican voters, fixing the immigration problem, our broken system, ranks through the roof. It is of critical importance. People ask, why is President Trump allowed to commit heresy against traditional conservative principles on issues across the board in his campaign and as president? Well, part of it is because he is speaking to the base on immigration. And it just shows how important that issue is to them, that they're willing to overlook a lot to get this fixed.
But they also want a DACA solution as part of that, don't they?
A lot of Republicans don't. They see it as
amnesty.
That's not
true.
They see it as amnesty.
No,
some do. Yeah. But you're going to deal with that amnesty word because they came here illegally. Are there some who are for it? Sure. Johnny Isaacson obviously is trying to come to some sort of compromise on that. But we are at historically high levels of foreign-born residents of this country. And when we have gotten to the levels we are now, the 14-15% range, in every time that's happened throughout American history, there has been pushback and saying enough is enough, slow it down, let's have some stasis and normality and get back to amalgamating the people who are already here.
Brian Robinson and Donald Trump have one thing in common, in that they want you to believe, Republicans who are listening to us right now, that the reason you can't get a job, the reason why your job is not available to you anymore, is because all of these illegals have migrated to the United States of America. That's not the issue. The reason these jobs have gone away from America, the reason these jobs are going away from us, is because of technology. This is a trick that the Republicans have been using to trick their base for so many years. And this is the first time I've ever wanted to communicate to Republicans. And I beg you, don't listen to Brian Robinson and Donald Trump. Sometimes I think it's Brian Trump and Donald Robinson. The way that I hear him on this cast, and he's basically pushing this message. It is technology. It is not immigrants. These people want to come here. Some come here to harm us, and some come here to commit illegal activity. They should be dealt with and not allowed in this country. But Brian, the tens of millions of others who want to come to this country to have the ability to explore the American dream. Republicans, I beg you, don't listen to Brian Trump and Donald Robinson when they tell you this stuff about immigration.
Look, that's just so utterly ridiculous. We as Americans have a right to determine who immigrates to our country. And I am not going to impugn the motives of those who bring their children here looking for a better life. But I'm also not going to impugn the policy positions of those working class Americans who have seen their wages not go up for 30 years because we've had this influx of low wage, unskilled labor into the country with absolutely no controls. And I am sorry, I am not going to demonize them and call them slurs like racist because they've seen their neighborhoods turn really fast. And they've seen property values go down. They've seen test scores at their local schools go down because of the high number of non-English speaking students who are in it. Those are economic realities. If you are a blue-collar American and you invest in a home and that value goes down, that is devastating to your economic future. So they're not bad people. They are people who are worried about their family's future.
To be continued. Finally, back to the state capitol for this one. The Senate passed the brunch bill and sent it over to the House. Now, this would lengthen that sacred Sunday institution brunch. Restaurants and wineries could start serving alcohol at 11. Supermarkets, grocery stores, and so forth would still have to wait until 12:30 to start selling alcohol. All of this subject to local vote. So, Brian, I guess your brunch plans are being made right now.
Well, I, being a good Republican, am at church at that hour, of course, which is weird.
Now, are you an evangelical Republican, or are you just a Republican who occasionally goes to church, or are you a Republican who actually uses the evangelical title to give an excuse of why you support your Christian values to vote for Donald Trump? Which one are you?
I am just sort of a mainline Presbyterian, so I'm none of those things. This is about local control. You know, Governor Deal, when he signed the bill several years ago that allowed for Sunday sales in Georgia by local referendum, he said, look, I don't even drink, but I believe in democracy. And it was a perfect line, and I think that's going to be true today. Look, this is a great economic development thing. I know a lot of yuppies in Theron's neighborhood like to get their drink on and do some day drinking on Sundays. And that's great for those folks who are working in those restaurants that probably get a little higher tips around 12:15 if they've been drinking since 11. So I think it's great. And I think what we saw when we did the Sunday sales a few years back is that there is tremendous local support throughout the state. It got voted down almost nowhere. It was like a handful of very rural places. So this is something that has a high level of acceptance. And I want to say that it is an example of smaller government, which Republicans should be for, and local control.
I think this is great for our state. It's great for our region for a few reasons. Back in 2010, when the Sunday sales legislation passed, I had the pleasure of working with a team of lobbyists to try to get that passed. It was us and Indiana were the only two states
that
didn't have any Sunday sales. And so,
Connecticut back in the day,
And Connecticut before that. But what I really want to do is commend just the political will and all the small restaurant owners and all the small businesses that continue to beg this Republican-led leadership to basically make up that difference in an hour and a half. I mean, that difference in an hour and a half is going to create hundreds and hundreds of thousands of more revenue for people who work in these restaurants and the small businesses as well. But also, Dennis, what it now also does is that it allows these restaurants to be more flexible to people in their neighborhood. You know, Brian likes to have a good cocktail every now and then, and I think he wants us to believe that he's this God-fearing Republican who goes to church every single Sunday. So I encourage our listeners that if you ever see Brian around church time on a Sunday and he's not in church, ask him why he's not there and say, why did you tell us on this broadcast that I'm always in church and I'm never, ever going to partake in a beverage on a Sunday? Because I guarantee you one thing. If the dogs were ever playing on a Sunday between the hours of 11 and 12:30, my good friend B-Rob definitely would not hesitate to pull out a cold.
It would be a spiritual crisis.
That's a different kind of religion.
That's it for this week's Political Breakfast. I'm Dennis O'Hare. I've been joined today by Democratic strategist Theron Johnson and Republican strategist Brian Robinson. Gentlemen, thanks so much. And next time we'll make it a political brunch. Why not?
Bottoms up. Yeah, we had to have make sure we have some alcohol.
Thanks to producer Sam Whitehead. And if you like this show, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. That really helps other people find us. We'll be back in your feed and in your head real soon with more nourishing political conversation. You have an open invitation to join us.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
The Gold Dome Scramble podcast is now Plugged In, a WAB politics podcast. New name, same in-depth, on-the-ground reporting from us, WAB politics reporters Sam Greenglass and Raul Bally. We'll cover local, state, and national politics as we go beyond the headlines with journalists, voters, and politicians. New episodes drop Fridays starting April 26th. Listen and subscribe at WAB.org or your favorite podcast platform.